Yes, please.
Mr. Finch, please. Robert Finch.
Thank you. Yes, please.
Colson, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. You did one yesterday that is marvelous because it took none of your time, and yet it got extensive media coverage, television as well as radio and well as in print. We sent a telegram to the governor's conference in which we urged the states to pass no-fault automobile insurance.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's a very popular consumer issue. I think that's the kind of thing where it puts you in a good posture.
Right.
The only people who oppose it are the tort lawyers, and the hell with them. There aren't that many of them.
God, yes.
It's a big consumer issue. I know the impact it's had in Massachusetts.
That's right.
And Connecticut, it's been enormously popular. They just cut the rates again in Massachusetts, and everybody thinks Frank Sargent's a hero. He's a jackass, but they all think he's a hero.
Hmm.
And now you're on that issue personally, and a very good telegram yesterday. It didn't take a nickel's worth of your time.
That sort of thing I'm all for.
Yep. And I was going home in the car radio last night. They were quoting from your statement on it, and then it was on TV, and it's in the press.
That's great. Incidentally, another good break we got was another good Supreme Court decision yesterday, too.
Oh, we've gotten a series of those.
But wasn't that great, you know, about the Potter Stewart and our four judges?
Uh-huh.
And I think if you could tell the PR people, I haven't seen much check of them using it, but you think they ought to use how Nixon's changed the court?
Yeah,
what do you think? Are we doing that or not?
We are doing it, Mr. President. There's been a pretty good amount of that. I think I've been impressed at the amount of coverage we've gotten on that. It's been quite a bit since.
Some of our, I was thinking of giving it to our speakers too. You know, when they talk about things, oh, we've changed the court. I mean, peace at home as well as peace abroad, a little of that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Domestic peace.
And make it damn clear that we had nothing to do with Angela Davis's case either.
Yeah, oh, Jesus, yes. The Richmond decision helps us because that was handed down by Haynesworth, whom he tried to put on the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Where they reversed the
that was great.
Jackass decision. It was great in terms of Richmond and helps us there. It hurts us in the busing thing in the Congress. We're probably this week going to get the damn provision that they have on the higher education bill. Because now, apparently, the Richmond case has taken a lot of the steam out of trying to get our moratorium substituted, our busing plan substituted for the one that Confreeze put on. The one that Confreeze put on doesn't do a damn thing. And McGregor said this morning that he was afraid that, in view of the Richmond case, that we probably now we're not going to be able to get that that one changed, and Congress will figure that they have settled the busing issue once they pass the conference report on higher education. Well,
you mean I have to sign it?
Yep.
Well, on what? You mean they're going to, I can't, why would it change? What do you mean?
Well, what happened is, Mr. President, they have on there this the compromise amendments that they added to the higher education bill on busing, which the Congress says, many of the Congress say, well, it's a good solution to the busing problem. It stays certain appeals, but it's a halfway solution.
Yeah, right.
And it does damn little, but it may diffuse the issue, you see.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And make it tougher for us to force the Congress to.
Why do I have to sign the bill then?
Well,
I thought we ought to be. I'm not for the higher education bill anyway.
No, I made that argument at the 8:15 meeting that maybe we ought to veto it, and everybody said, well, you'll get accused then of being anti-education and rejecting the busing thing in order to keep the issue alive. Well, that's the point of view. It's one you may want to think about because it is a half-assed solution to the busing problem, but it gets them all off.
Well, it isn't going to take the. Remove the busing issue, though.
No, it doesn't remove the issue.
It doesn't remove it because the moratorium didn't even remove it. You know,
that's right.
There's a hell of a lot of people that aren't going to be affected by this. Isn't that true?
That's right. Yes, sir. That's the problem with it, and it may be that.
Getting back to this busing thing, you mean that these silly amendments that the Congress puts in, the Congress is going to claim it has handled the busing issue?
That's
now?
What they'll say, yep. That's the difficulty with it. You see, they'll now take the position, well, we went through an elaborate conference. We came up with a very good compromise solution, and this is it. And we're going to say, well, that you haven't solved the problem, and they're going to say, yeah, we solved the problem. So.
Yeah, well, the message, if we sign it, has got to say
that's
it's not solved. Good God, I mean, this is a horrible bill. I mean, and the whole higher education thing is a mess anyway. It's a monstrosity.
It is. The money in there is just absurd. But
no, I may still veto it.
Well, it's
pass it around on there. It'll scare hell out of some of the left-wingers.
Oh, my God. I just
against the bill for other reasons.
If I pass that around today, they'd start jumping out windows here.
That's right.
I said it at the 8:15 meeting, and everybody jumped in.
Yeah, I know.
But it's I think the message is the key, and I've told Ken Cole and domestic council people that they'd better get a very, very stiff, hard line message that just says to the Congress, you haven't done a damn thing about busing, and this is a cosmetic, and only a cosmetic, and will not solve any problems. And
I want Buchanan to write the message.
Good.
On that part of it. You just order that, okay?
I'll get Pat to do it, yeah.
Yeah, so that we don't have it written in too soft language.
Right.
Okay.
Yes, sir. We'll do that. Thank you, Mr. President.
Aspen, please.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Mr. Look,
yes, please.
Could you get me Dr. Kissinger, please?
Thank you, Mr. President.
Hello?
Yes, please.
Hello? Did you ring?
Yes, one moment.
Yeah.
Dr. Kissinger is in the barber shop and asked that you let him call you in a few minutes.
Yeah, well, whenever it's convenient. No hurry.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Hello?
Mr. President.
Well, you got your hair cut now and all ready to go, huh?
Yeah.
Fine.
I had a long talk with the Brennan this morning.
Yeah.
Let me get my door closed. Right.
Right.
He came back absolutely effusive. Personal message to you from Brezhnev saying that there were many important and historic results of the summit. But the most historic result was the relationship established between the Soviet leaders and President Nixon.
Good.
And
that's good. Good.
Not since the war have Soviet-American relations been on such a basis, and they want to express their personal confidence, and so on and so forth. He also sent me a very nice note.
Good, 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 good.
And he mentioned to me about the Vietnam thing. They sent a summary of our discussions to Hanoi and said that Podgorny would be glad to come and fill them in on the remainder. They didn't give them everything. And Hanoi hasn't replied yet, and that's why Podgorny is gone.
I see.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, well...
But it doesn't make any difference, Mr. President.
We just continue doing what we're doing.
Exactly. If Hanoi, in fact, it gives us a better justification.
Yeah, yeah.
If Hanoi didn't feel that Moscow wasn't on its side, Podgorny would be there now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we'll go ahead on that hydroelectric thing, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Fine. Did the matter come up indirectly, directly with regard to the possible visit of the Democratic nominee to Moscow, or did you? That didn't anyway.
Well, I mentioned it, and said he said they know where they stand, and he said that they had had no overture, and they. I don't expect that to happen myself.
Yeah. Well, it may. The other point I was going to make is this. Did you see this utterly stupid thing of McGovern's, the effect that he'd go to Hanoi?
Well, not only that he would go to Hanoi, but at Hanoi he would promise them withdrawal of all U.S. forces
yeah.
and of help to put you I think we should say that we can do in Paris, but that you don't have to go to Hanoi.
Yeah, you can surrender in Paris. You don't have to go to Hanoi to surrender.
That's right.
That should be the line that you should put up to Colson's group, that look, if we, he should be attacked, that this is a shocking thing. We could, he doesn't have to go to Hanoi to surrender.
We are getting a flood of reports now that they are in deep trouble. We got a report from Peking today.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of sharp divisions in the Politburo in Hanoi, another report from Belgrade.
Mm-hmm.
They are in deep trouble, Mr. President.
Mm. They've just got to be, Henry. They've got to be.
Uh-huh. It looks as if they have finally linked up with Anne Lark.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That 21st Division.
Not the 21st Division. They've brought in an airborne unit to do it.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate.
And then at least an Abrams is still hammering the hell out of them with those B-52s, huh?
Oh, yeah. Oh, and now he's moved. Now we are up at an 84 sortie rate. 87.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And he's now beginning to creep up in the panhandle. He's across the DMZ now. He's just leveling it.
And you mean by that he's making the trail almost unusable then, isn't he?
Well, making the supply through the panhandle.
I see.
The trail is closed down anyway now by the weather.
By the way, it rains. Mm-hmm.
And,
And, well, God damn it, you know, these people are not supermen, Henry. You've got to,
President, they are,
they're not supermen.
There is a limit to what they can take.
Oh, that's fine. Well, we wish you well on your trip. You leave at 4:30.
I
hope to take plenty of sleeping pills along.
Right.
And
well, I can go right to bed when I get there, too.
Yeah.
So I ought to be on
that. Yeah. Yeah, well, what the hell? What you do there is, you know what I mean, it's off the back of your hand. Just to try to incidentally make our ambassador feel, bring him into something.
Oh, I'll bring him in most things.
Because basically he is totally loyal, and it'll build him up with his staff. And, it's one of those things. So if you can do that, it isn't like with the Soviet and the Chinese, where we didn't want the ambassador in. Well, the Soviet.
Coming in to everything, Mr. President. Except the meeting with Sato, which they insisted be alone.
That's right.
And the meeting with Fukuda, but he will join us at the end of the Fukuda meeting.
Right. Good. That's good.
So
we're going to go forward on a very quiet basis. I'll handle it myself. I mean, you can just put Fulbright off by saying you can't have an answer till he made that.
Right.
That you've submitted it to me. Just leave it there.
Right.
And then we'll because we can't give him, when you go down there, we can't give him the satisfaction of announcing it. See, I have to announce it.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing, Mr. President, though, that I feel now very strongly is that you should not announce my China trip.
Oh, fine.
That's putting it too much to the discussion.
You mean just have that announced by Ziegler?
Have it announced low-key by Ziegler.
Before my conference?
If you have a conference. Schedule your conference for the afternoon. But you should not jeopardize your relations with Brezhnev.
No, I wouldn't. But when do you want it announced? On Tuesday, when the day you get back?
It could be announced on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Well, then it could be announced. It could be announced in the morning, see?
You could.
And I don't plan to have my conference till 3 in the afternoon anyway.
Well, that would be better.
See, but I'd prefer not to announce it.
And then you'd sort of blanket it a little bit, which would be...
And it'd be good for me to come on then and announce you're going to testify, and that'll blanket it, see?
I don't think you can hold it that long if I'm going to testify on Thursday.
Oh, yes, I can. Yeah. I can if I... Because of the... You just don't figure that you've got... The way the Senate always plays is we've got to know 3 days in advance. They don't have... They can know 1 hour in advance. They'll take you. And this will be 24 hours in advance, and it'll build like hell that day and that and the next morning. And
well, that's, of course, entirely up to you, Mr. Baird. They can get the right coverage that you want in within...
It takes 24 hours. Oh, Christ, the moment it's announced it, that afternoon, you see, if we announce it at 3 in the afternoon, the networks will all go right to work.
Right. Well, that's entirely up to you.
We want to get it with maximum jolt and as little discussion as possible from the... think that's the way we want to do it, so that we are not in the position of being dragged down there. See, that would be a very bad situation if it were that way.
But we should work out something by which he says ahead of time that this is an exception.
Oh, sure. We'll tell him. Tell him exactly what he can say.
Right.
I'll probably do it in the form of a letter or something like that. But in any event, we will we'll now not submit the treaty until Tuesday. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. And, but we'll work out the logistics of the announcement, all right?
Right.
Well, we hope you have a good trip, Henry.
Right.
At least I know it isn't going to be good, but I hope it's not too tiring.
Well, I'm sure it will be all
right. All right, bye.
Right. Thank you.
Yes, please.
Alderman, please.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Hello?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I think, I wondered if you could get a hold of Henry. He doesn't leave before 4:30, does he?
Right.
Have him take a gander at this thing that Price has prepared. It seems to me that it's the technical things, if I decide to go, I'll use, but it seems to me that it's far too euphoric, and which, of course, I can change if I want to make the effort and so forth, because I've taken quite a bit, but I just want to get his feeling on it. Would you have him take a copy over to him and have him take a quick gander at it before he leaves?
Yep.
What time is it now? 3:30?
I think so. Yeah. About, yeah.
Okay, let's have him take a look, okay?
Sure.
Call me back.
Right.
Yeah.
Mr. Haldeman for you?
Yeah.
Go ahead, sir.
Hello? Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Henry's gone over the speech, and it's interesting. I didn't give him your reaction at all. I just said you wanted to get a feel of what he thought of it.
Yeah.
And he said it's too peacenicky and too euphoric.
Yeah.
And he said it's not Nixon at all.
Yeah, I know.
That his whole strength is that he's been tough and peaceful, where this sounds like McGovern.
Yeah, yeah.
And his view is that in the first place you shouldn't talk about foreign policy at all for a while, that you don't need it. You'll detract from both Moscow and your congressional speeches.
Yeah.
And that you're in a position of supremacy now, and you shouldn't put it to a test, because the best you can do is come out even.
Yeah. Well, I sort of had that feeling. I've been sitting here working on the damn thing, Bob, and, it just isn't worth... I mean...
Let's toss in some other negatives. I was talking to Chuck again, and he said, God, I hope
Chuck
he...
who?
Coulson.
Oh, yeah.
He said, I hope he isn't going to go down to Houston and do the rotary. And,
yeah, well, listen, come on over and let's talk about it over here.
Okay.
Yes, Mr.
Kissinger, please.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Yeah.
Mr. President?
Well, you're just about off, huh?
That's right. I'm on the way.
Oh, good. Well, just, sorry you have to do it, but, you may find that, the fact that you don't have the damn pressure on this trip, it won't be nearly as hard on you in a sense, you know?
Well,
I think the combination of a long trip and terrible pressure, you know, is very hard. I know, for example, when I finish a political campaign, even though it isn't the traveling, it's the fact I've been under very, very heavy pressure. And, you know, if you go on a vacation, take a long trip, you don't feel that bad, you know?
That's right. No, and it will do some good.
Oh, of course it will. I what I meant is, though, you can handle it. You don't have to prepare for it like you do the others, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, you know the Japanese situation like the back of your hand.
Right.
And you're not going to have those damned all-night sessions and all that sort of thing.
No, it isn't, and nothing depends on it.
Yeah, well...
I mean, there's not going to be agreement to
play. Sure. Well, but what I meant is, it's a kind of a thing where just the fact that you're going and being available and talking to them and holding their hands is a good thing. And it's going to be good. It'll worry the Chinese and worry the Russians, and that's good.
That's right.
And it'll reassure the Japanese a little.
Well, sure. I tell you, that conversation with the Brennan was amazing.
Yeah, I was so interested in that. He really felt that the personal relationship had been established.
That's right. He said that is the key thing. He said that. And now that's not what he thought. That's what Brezhnev is telling you. That's the message from Brezhnev.
Oh, I see. Well, that's important. That's important. And also, it's important that he feels that he has the same relation with you, because that means you can take that next trip and it'll just be like, we really got to come down to it, Henry, that every time, you know, every time some torpedo boat moves into the Cienfuegos, I can't get into it. And now we've got a relationship established where you can.
That's right.
See what I mean? I mean, you have before, but now he knows, and we need to do that because normally you'd have your Secretary of State for that sort of thing, but they know that that has no credibility.
That's right. He told me off the record, he said Kosygin was appalled at how little Rogers knew about the trade thing.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, Kosygin knew everything about it, and one thing about it, Peterson will be well prepared. He'll do a good job. Incidentally, I was interested in your reaction to that speech thing, as I know that Bob told you, but before I had told him, or I had read it, and I didn't want to bother you, and I said, Bob, I just read this thing, and it's just too damn euphoric, I think, but I should see if what Henry's reaction is without telling him what mine is, and yours is exactly the same.
Exactly, almost verbatim.
I said it's euphoric. And the point that I'm concerned about is that why it is that our speechwriters, after they have worked on speeches with me, you know, every one that I've made, and I keep changing about it, why do they always come up with the same stuff, Henry? I don't know, you know?
Well, that's their basic conviction, but it also supports the point we were discussing yesterday.
Yeah.
The degree to which you have pulled this government along.
Yeah. You know, if we just, in other words, if I were to follow it, I could go off and read this. That's what most people would do.
And it's a rather good speech,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
the pappy speech.
It'll sound nice to the Rotarians.
That's right.
And it'll say, gee, things have all changed and the world is different. For example, I would have thought that any speechwriter would have put in, when they said how much the world had changed, let's also remember, however, that the world has not changed in certain respects. Our philosophies are very different. We have very great differences, and so do they, you know what I mean. You've got to put that in, and there are realistic people on both sides who have a different view of the world, and just getting to know each other isn't going to settle it. These agreements isn't going to assure it. Well, you know what I mean. It's just one of those things that it just shows you too, Henry, that on all this stuff we just got in the foreign policy, we just got to watch every word.
That's exactly right.
Because all of a sudden it'll slip by, and some jackass statement will be made that we shouldn't want to make.
Exactly.
As you say, this speech is practically one that McGovern could make.
That's right.
Huh?
Except for a few pages at the end.
Oh, yeah, where we threw in the... Attorney General, please.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Hello.
Yes, Mr. President.
Yeah.
The Attorney General will be arriving in Philadelphia in about 15 minutes. He'll be back in Washington at 3 this afternoon.
I'll call him at 3.
Very fine. Thank you, sir. Yes, please.
Schultz, please.
Thank
George
you, Mr.
Schultz.
President.
Hello.
Good morning, sir.
Well, you had a pretty close shave, didn't you?
Yeah. Just got by. I was glad to see that Dick wound up with fewer votes against him than predicted.
Yeah, it was overwhelming and a purely partisan vote,
right.
And not bad at that. Right. Well, we thought we'd have a swearing-in for all three on Monday, have a cap, too, so that we can start the week off with everybody in place.
Great.
In place, right. I'm going to see John Ehrlichman here shortly. He's arriving back from Stockholm.
Yeah, I saw him this morning. He was in.
Figure out some ways to veto some environment bills now. I hope.
Well, we have
we should have to save some money someplace. I don't know where.
We have a serious budget problem, all right.
Serious? Oh, God, it's unbelievable. I've read all those stuff. And, of course, when you look at the budget problem, you're figuring they're figuring the outside, but we got to realize the way the Congress goes, and unless we do veto these things, we could reach that outside number.
Yeah.
$55 billion in 74, right?
Right. That is a figure that can't be permitted to happen, but it's
That's a figure that would happen, though, as I understand it, if we got revenue sharing, and if we got welfare reform, and if we got the water bill, and if we got all the other nutty things.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Well, anyway, we'll see. We're glad you're through and that your people, your underlings are confirmed, so that's fine, too.
Well, I think that we keep the show together until after the election over
then,
there.
Then you can
then make changes.
That's right. That's right.
But I've had several talks with Volker on just what our stance is. We put out a statement the day before yesterday
right.
on this gold business that you may or may not have seen. But
mm-hmm.
anyway, we took the occasion to say that the way this price is going, it only shows further that the gold is not a suitable commodity for
right.
The basis of the monetary system.
Yeah, $66.
So Arthur won't like that much, but anyway, that's the fact of the matter.
Right. Well, you got Volker lined up, though.
I think Volker is tracking all right. I've had some lengthy discussions,
right.
and where I don't agree with him, I tell him, and then
right.
I tell him to let's write out a paragraph now
yeah.
say what it is that we're, the position we're going
right.
to take.
Right. Well, Volker, obviously,
he's an able fellow.
He's an able fellow, and he's a pragmatist, and he's trying to work a deal out.
Right.
But we can't allow Arthur, with his tenacity, to force on us something that we can't live with. That's really what it gets down to.
I think that's right.
Well, anyway, have a good weekend.
Thank you, sir.
Bye.
Appreciate the call. Yes, please.
Mr. Mitchell, please.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Yeah.
President?
That's a fine picture of you and Kleindienst on the front page. I'd surprise the bastard used such a good one.
Well, it was...
Where was that taken?
It was taken... Dick had a little reception over in the Justice Department.
Oh.
Went over there, and they had all the cameras and press and so forth.
Yeah, I just tried to call him this morning. He's in Philadelphia.
I hope he's working.
God, what's he doing up there, making a speech or something?
I haven't the faintest idea, but I would believe so.
Yeah.
He's a good property.
Yeah. You know, the vote was good, John, wasn't it? Not a didn't lose the Republican. Even that Percy turned around. You know?
Oh, Percy was strong for him because of McLaren. They're old friends, you know.
Oh, I see.
And I think the big vote was Mansfield.
Did he vote for it?
Yes, he did.
Why do you think he did?
Well, Mike is a fellow that doesn't always go the political way. He does sometimes what's right. And they couldn't make a political issue out of it. They tried to in their party caucuses and all the way through, but they just couldn't do it.
I think, too, that I just had a feeling, John, that, you know, there's always, it's sort of a strong, and after coming back from the Moscow trip and everything, these guys don't kind of want to be in the position of fighting the president too hard in every damn thing. What do you think?
I would agree with that. I'd certainly.
Not that they wouldn't love to do it, but, you know, they watch the wind.
Yes, and of course the steam went out of this outside of the Washington Post and the New York Times, and they always look at their own postures around the country.
People didn't care, huh?
The people not only didn't care, but based on the cartoons and so forth, they lost their credibility.
They thought they were just too darned partisan.
Partisan, politically motivated.
Which they were. They were. Well, thank God, you know, only 19 votes. That really... Rudy is good, and I hope he's rough as hell on people, too.
Right.
You know, he shouldn't allow this to make him a little tender. You understand what I mean?
I don't think it's Kleindienst's nature, but
I
certainly will impart the message.
You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Connolly mentioned that to me. He said, you know, he just hopes that Dick doesn't... Just so many people, when they go through a tough confirmation, then sort of bend to the wind, and he says, don't let him do it. And I think Connolly's right.
I do, too, and I'm certainly...
So you let him... You know,
I'll go over that with him because I think his disposition would be the other way around once he knows he has his base.
That's right. Well, he is a good fellow.